Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Times have changed at the Department of Agriculture. This bill puts the disastrous policies of the Biden administration behind us.
Dr. Andy Harris is a representative from Maryland and a member of the House Appropriations Committee.
Under President Trump and Secretary Rollins' leadership, every taxpayer dollar will be spent in the pursuit of putting American farmers and ranchers first. This bill follows their example in providing the support and resources American farmers deserve while reducing our burgeoning federal deficit. As I've said before, we are not appropriating monopoly money. It's hard-earned taxpayer dollars, and sometimes tough decisions have to be made. In an era of unrelenting $2 trillion deficits, fiscal restraint has to start, and it has to start now. This bill reflects that sobering reality.
This is Agriculture Today.
You look back a little bit, this actually should have been done for 2026 by last November 1st. The Biden administration chose not to complete the work, so this was kind of left at the doorstep of the incoming Trump administration.
Kurt Kavarik is Vice President, Federal Affairs, Clean Fuels Alliance America on the Renewable Fuel Standard Volume Requirement.
So what we have in front of us is the proposal to set volumes for the categories for 2026 and 2027 with a comment period that will take us throughout the summer, and then the expectation that they would finalize this by November 1st.
What's the industry reaction?
This is probably more complicated and a handful of more novel approaches in this proposal than we've seen in recent memory. So there's a lot of kind of initial knee-jerk reaction. As people read more, understand more, that may continue to be the case, or you may find some things here that undermine that. But at least for right now, the way we look at it is this is very positive for biomass-based diesel. And here's the scenario. We have been asking a unified ask between clean fuels, our members and our producers, the soybean industry, and the petroleum industry with American Petroleum Institute and others. We've been asking for a volume of 5.25 billion gallons for 2026, up from 3.35 billion for this current year. What we knew was our industry produced well over 5 billion gallons. 3.35 was insufficient, and we've had plant idle and plant reduced capacity as a result of that. What we have from EPA today is a little bit more complicated. It's not as straightforward because they've chosen not to put our volume forward in gallons, but they've chosen to put it forward in RINs, another acronym. A RIN is the Renewable Identification Number, that is the credit trading mechanism. So you have to do a little bit of math. EPA tells us that the volume that they're setting is essentially the equivalent of about 5.61 billion gallons based on their estimates. If that's the case, that's an enormous positive step for our industry, our producers. And as you said, we're seeing it in market reaction right now, which is exactly what this administration headlined in terms of what they wanted this program to do, and that is to support U.S. farmers, support U.S. biofuel producers, domestic energy dominance, while adding enormous value to a farmer's bottom line in the rural economy. So we'll continue to evaluate it over the coming days and weeks, ensure that, you know, the parts that we like, we emphasize. The parts that we don't like, we'll share our displeasure with EPA and see if we can improve them. But the way it looks today, it looks very positive.
What is set to?
A lot of the statutory volumes, meaning the volumes that were set by Congress, expired in 2022. So when they did a three-year proposal in 2023, they called it Set 1. And the reason they call it Set is because it essentially allowed EPA a lot more discretion and leeway to reset the volumes across all the categories. So what they did in 2023 for the 3 years of 23, 24, and 25 was referred to as Set 1. So naturally, Washington and bureaucrats, because they're extraordinarily creative, came up with the name for this one, which is Set 2. I assume that means that when they start proposing volumes for 2028 and beyond, that'll begin to be referred to as Set 3.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Our only order of business today is consideration of the Agriculture, Rural Development, Food and Drug Administration related agencies appropriations bill for fiscal year 2026.
Chairman of the House Appropriations Committee from Oklahoma, Tom Cole. Dr. Andy Harris represents Maryland.
I appreciate the conversations Mr. Bishop and I have had, and while I know we don't agree on everything in the bill, we do agree on the importance of the agencies and programs this bill funds. For FY26, the Agriculture, Rural Development, Food and Drug Administration and related agencies subcommittee's discretionary allocation is $25.5 billion, a $1.1 billion or 4.2% decrease from FY25 enacted levels. In a setting of ongoing $2 trillion deficits, that modest constraint is necessary. This legislation reflects a clear, conservative commitment to fiscal responsibility while ensuring that America's farmers, ranchers, and rural communities remain a top priority and that all Americans have access to a safe food and drug supply. At the same time, this legislation turns the page on the disastrous 4 years of the Biden administration. By rooting out wasteful spending, reducing the federal bureaucracy, and incorporating efficiencies that DOGE has identified, this bill sets USDA on a responsible and sustainable spending path that will make the department and our nation stronger. Under the Biden administration, core USDA services suffered. This includes the failure to effectively deliver disaster aid to farmers, delays in administering basic grant programs, and catastrophic food shortages in tribal and elderly communities, resulting from poor decision-making and a lack of interest by top USDA leadership. The previous administration instead focused its efforts on implementing unconstitutional loan forgiveness programs, incorporating the woke agenda into grants and programs across USDA, writing regulations that made it harder for producers to earn a living, and pushing billions of unauthorized funds out the door for climate change projects. The Biden administration did much of this while using the so-called Inflation Reduction Act monies and leftover COVID-era funds. These funds, which were meant to be one-time emergency measures, were used by the prior administration to hire new, permanent staff and expand the woke federal bureaucracy.
Dr. Harris chairs that subcommittee. The ranking member from Georgia, Sanford Bishop, member of the House Ag Committee.
I'm extremely concerned about language in the report that directs states to share personally identifiable information of those who use SNAP with USDA. We cannot compromise people's privacy simply because they participate in the program. We've been told that we are only facing a cut of about 4%, but that is $1.2 billion in cuts, with the biggest chunks being taken out of the FDA, food programs, and rural development. These programs provide important services for our rural communities, the nation, and the world. And we need to make sure that these programs grow with our country and have enough resources for the people and the communities that they are meant to support. This bill is making it more costly for folks in rural America by cutting much-needed investments in housing, facilities, and utilities programs that help families and small businesses and rural communities save money and thrive. It retreats from nutrition programs that help the most vulnerable afford healthy food, and at the same time engage America's agriculture producers in our country's effort to fight hunger. I'm hopeful that we will put aside partisanship to improve this bill and provide adequate resources for all of the stakeholders of USDA, rural communities, and our federal administration. If we cannot produce a bill that works for all of the American people, I will not be able to support it.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
You support this vital program.
At a recent House Ag Committee hearing, former chairman from Georgia, David Scott, questioning Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins on historically black colleges.
You have not frozen or advocated freezing the money.
No.
Another member from Georgia, Austin Scott.
Madam Secretary, and I'm asking for your help with this, and I want, and what I'm asking for is transparency in this. And so you'll recall that in the American Rescue Plan, there was $3 billion that was put in for people, and if you owed any money to the USDA, you were going to receive 120% of whatever your loan balance was. There was one race that was excluded from that payment. The courts ruled that it was unconstitutional, that you could not discriminate and exclude erased from those payments. That money was that I think it was four out of four federal judges said you could not exclude based on race. Then, so that same money was then transferred into the Inflation Reduction Act. And in the Inflation Reduction Act, they did two things. One of them was the Farm Loan Borrowers Relief Program. And basically, how any loan who was more than 60 days late got brought current. So if you were 5 years late on your farm payment, you got 5 years worth of payments plus the next payment made. Now, if you cashed in your retirement plan to make your farm payment, you didn't get anything. But anyway, they brought those loans current and plus 60 days. And my understanding is there's questions around the 1099. It is clearly taxable income since there was not a bankruptcy. And just want to make sure that we're working with the IRS. My understanding is two separate 1099s may have been issued on that and making sure that that is taxable income by law. But then there was about $2.2 billion that was paid out, and there were discrimination payments. Over 40% of those payments went to people who had never farmed, and they were ranged between $5,000 and $500,000 in the payments. And my understanding is a third-party vendor was used to make the determination of discrimination or not discriminated against, and that third-party vendor no longer exists, nor did they exist prior to the program being put in. 50% of the payments went to Alabama and Mississippi. Almost 50% of the payments didn't went to people that never farmed. And I just want to make sure that we're looking into this and where those payments went to, who they went to, and that it's going to be public record who received those payments. And so I've met with your people. Just any comments on that would be appreciated. But just, again, looking for a commitment to continue to work to find out if there was fraud in those payments.
Congressman, what I have seen in the last 118 days since I was sworn in mid-February has blown my mind. It is stunning the amount of money that was pushed out in the last USDA without accountability, without understanding of where it was going, that just the pure sums are absolutely mind-boggling. So we are working feverishly to try to get our arms around it, and we'll continue to do so. And I would so welcome your partnership in that as we're moving that forward. But, yes, you have my 100% commitment.
I want to know who was the vendor that got paid the 10% of that money. That's a lot of money that someone got paid.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
What we're talking about here is a proposal from EPA under the Renewable Fuel Standard to promulgate regulations setting forth the blending requirements for all of the categories of biofuels for the years of 2026 and 2027.
That's Kurt Kavarik, Vice President of Federal Affairs with the Clean Fuels Alliance America.
So this is a proposal.
He's referencing EPA's volume requirements for 2026 and 2027 under the Renewable Fuels Standard.
Under the statute, Congress did not provide any direction as to the eligibility of foreign fuels in the Renewable Fuel Standard. It essentially treated them as if they were domestic fuels for the purpose of this program. What this EPA has chosen to do in this proposal is to essentially provide a preference for U.S. fuel and U.S. feedstocks. And they did this by reducing the credit by half for any fuel that's imported or any feedstock, any fuel that's produced with a feedstock that is not of U.S. origin. So what this essentially means is any finished fuel, in our case, in biomass-based diesel, we've seen enormous volumes of fuel in previous years from Argentina or Singapore or South Korea or a handful of other countries. In the case of ethanol, there might have been cases where we've had Brazilian ethanol coming in. Nothing in this proposal would prevent that fuel from coming in. You would only get half the credit under the program for doing so. So a little bit of a an additional incentive for the fuel to be produced here in the United States from feedstocks of U.S. origin.
And when it comes to RINs, or renewable ID numbers, there's something known as e-RINs.
This is a concept that was pushed under the previous administration and some proponents of electric vehicles to try to use the renewable fuel standard, which is a liquid fuel program, to somehow incentivize electric vehicles if the electricity is produced also from a biomass. So there was a complicated scheme that the Biden administration proposed. It was never finalized because I think of its complication. But this EPA very clearly said that they are eliminating any consideration of renewable electricity in terms of generating credits under this program, that the RFS was developed to be a biofuels liquid energy program, and their intention is to keep it that way. Our viewpoint is we certainly would agree with that was the intention of the program. Under the previous administration, our comments with respect to an e-RIN or an incentive for electricity was simply that it not be at the detriment of biofuels, that the program was intended to be promoting of biofuels, and that any incentive for e-RINs should be on top of that and not necessarily displacement of. So we're not in conflict with anything this EPA has done on that. We think that this is probably more in line with the original congressional intent when they created the renewable fuel standard back in 2005. So it makes sense. And given this administration's activities around unwinding a lot of what they refer to as the EV mandates, whether it's in states or at the federal level, this is certainly consistent with their viewpoint on that.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
And I will make the last amendment of the night relatively brief.
At a House Appropriations Committee hearing last week on ag, Maine Representative Shelley Pingree.
I know it is a riveting topic to all of you. It is an amendment about the food waste liaison. Now, most of you don't spend a lot of time thinking about food waste. And every time I bring up food, it always reminds us of what's on our tables and what we're eating or not eating. But the truth is we waste about 30% of the food in this country. And that's quite a travesty when you think about your grandmother who told you never to waste good food. It also means not only are we wasting that food, we're wasting the farmer's time, we're wasting the water that goes into it, we're wasting the transportation of moving our food around the country, and even worse, most of it ends up in a landfill, and once in a landfill, it turns into methane gas, and whether you believe in climate change or not, it's not good for the environment, and it's an expense to all of our communities. So several years ago, the USDA created a food waste liaison and have been doing some great work along with the EPA to help reduce our food waste. They do everything from thinking about ways to limit the liability of people who donate food, of making sure we put more food into composting or biodigesters, helping state and local governments to deal with sensible laws related to this. There are a whole host of things in the very complex world of what goes wrong in our food supply chain systems that we waste so much food. And it's a very valuable piece of work. Now, we've been able to get that position funded every year for $500,000, and this year it was arbitrarily cut down to $250,000, which is just not adequate to do the task. So this is a simple amendment that restores the funding to an already modest amount to do this important work and continues the work that we've been doing. It's a very bipartisan issue. Mr. Newhouse is the co-chair of the Food Waste Caucus, where we discuss these riveting issues, and we work on things like food date labeling. Who amongst us has not had the problem when you went into the food pantry and you picked something up and you said, oh my gosh, it's expired. Should I throw it away? And then someone else in your family says, no, you got to throw it away. And you say, no, it's perfectly good to eat. And then it ends it up in a domestic dispute, and we call this bill the Domestic Harmony Bill to make sure that we restore those domestic fights that are going on in families. Anyway, we do great work. The USDA has done great work with the modest amount of money that it has, and this just puts back the $250,000. I encourage my colleagues in their last sleepy endeavor of the night to just gently say yes and go along with this amendment, and I yield back.
Thank the gentlelady. The gentleman from Maryland, Dr. Harris, is recognized to respond to the amendment.
I'm convinced I support the amendment.
I should have done this about 2 hours ago.
That Appropriations Committee meeting multiple hours to consider USDA's budget of $21.9 billion. That's a decrease of $807 million from FY25. It includes an increase in funding for the Ag Research Service, a reduction for the National Institute of Food and Ag, also for Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, maintains the FY25 spending levels, and reductions to the Ag Marketing Service, Farm Service Agency, Risk Management Agency, and NRCS. It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I'm pleased to report that Treasury has just completed its most successful tax filing season in years, and we did so while improving efficiencies and cutting costs at the IRS.
Testifying before House Ways and Means Committee, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent.
Critics of the president's efforts to modernize the IRS warned that the effort would result in a 10% shortfall in receipts. Instead, the opposite happened. April receipts this year were up 9.5% over the previous year, and receipts in May were up 14.7% over the previous year. Most remarkably, the president was able to achieve these results while reducing $2 billion in waste and planned IT spending at the IRS. This success has taken place against the backdrop of one of the most consequential tax proposals ever to come before Congress, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, or as I will call it today, OBBB. The One Big Beautiful Bill will make the 2017 tax cuts permanent. This will provide individuals and businesses with certainty and build economic momentum. The legislation is squarely aimed at boosting the working and middle class and reinvigorating American manufacturing. According to the Council of Economic Advisors, the One Big Beautiful Bill will raise take-home pay between $7,800 and $13,300 for the average family of four. It will increase wages between $6,100 to $11,600 for the average worker, and it will cement no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, and tax cuts for seniors. The One Big Beautiful Bill will also incentivize unprecedented investment in U.S. manufacturing. The legislation will provide 100% expensing for new factories, as well as existing factories that expand operations and support Made in America. It will streamline burdensome permitting processes that often stand in the way of new manufacturing projects. It's time for this country to start building things again, and the OBBB makes this possible. The administration is grateful for the leadership of this committee in shepherding the One Big Beautiful Bill through the House. We are working closely with members of the Senate to get this legislation to the president's desk. Trade is the second topic I wish to highlight. The progress we have made on tax issues over the last 4 months complements the significant progress we have made in rebalancing the global economy. Since I last testified before Congress in May, the President announced a historic U.S.-UK trade deal. This arrangement, which creates a $5 billion export opportunity for American ranchers, farmers, and manufacturers, is a preview of what's to come. Dozens of countries have engaged the administration thus far with offers to improve their trade relations with the United States. This includes China. I have just returned in the middle of last night from successful negotiations in London with a Chinese delegation that will not only stabilize the economic relationship between our two economies, but make it more balanced. China has a singular opportunity to stabilize its economy by shifting away from excess production towards greater consumption, but the country needs to be a reliable partner in trade negotiations. If China will course correct by upholding its end of the initial trade agreement we outlined in Geneva, and I believe after our talks in London they will, then the rebalancing of the world's two largest economies is possible.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
So this is a proposal.
Kurt Kavarik with the Clean Fuels Alliance of America on the Renewable Fuels Standard.
EPA will hold a public hearing on July 8th where stakeholders will have an opportunity to testify for a couple minutes on their priorities. It will be open for public comment for 45 days. That clock starts once it's published in the Federal Register. And EPA then will read those comments. They will be required to respond to them, incorporate improvements as they see fit based on those comments. And then the rule will become final. Their goal, I think, was by November 1st, which sets us up to be back on track, at least for the volumes for 2027. And so it begins the clock again to start setting volumes for 2028 at that point in time. But the goal here is to take the public comment, digest it, and then finalize a rule, hopefully not later than around November 1st.